You're listening to The Home Tech Show, brought to you by The Average Guy Podcast Network. For this and other great podcasts, please visit theaverageguy.tv or look for us in iTunes.
This is the Home Tech Podcast Show number 47 for October 13th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a rainy but beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska, and posted each week with world-class show notes to the AverageGuy.tv. You can contact the show, podcast at AverageGuy.tv, or track me down on Twitter at Jay Collison. You can also find us on Facebook just by searching the Average Guy Podcast. We've also set up all the links you could ever need to automatically download the podcast to your iPhone, iPod, iPad, as well as any other Android phone or Android device, like a tablet, maybe some new tablets that are coming out. And I don't know if we'll actually download to the Kindle Fire, so I'll have to check that out. But just in case you wanted to try, head over to theaverageguy.tv. We've got a bunch of leaks. If you're in iTunes, it's just a little icon that looks like the iTunes symbol, and then the RSS feed will get you everything else. Tonight with me is a regular cast and crew. And one of the guys, even though he's not a regular, is becoming a regular. We'll introduce him here in just a second. First off, Christian Johnson. Of course, Christian is all things behind bios-mods.com and busy student as well as aspiring, maybe, Windows Home Server Drobo developer. Christian Johnson, how are you, Christian?
I'm doing all right, guys. Busy week, but it's been all right weather, minus some rain. Yeah. But another week.
All right. Well, it's good to have you. You and I spent a little time talking about, of course, I was referring to the Drobo Windows Home Server add-in challenge that we launched last night at the homeservershow.com, where Drobo has offered to let developers, aspiring developers of the Windows Home Server add-ins, they will give you a Drobo and say, make an add-in, and the first one to get a decent add-in out on the ecosystem will get to keep the Drobo. So pretty cool little cool program. And of course, as soon as I told that to Christian, and I'll be honest, I gave Christian advance notice on this thing. But he said, I wonder how hard that would be. And I said, Christian, you really need to concentrate on your schoolwork.
Yeah. That's what he said.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. I said, the last thing I want you to do is your dad cutting you off of the Home Tech Podcast. So hold that thought, maybe over Christmas break. Maybe nobody will have broken the code by Christmas break. So, also with us tonight, my friend from the land down under. I hate saying that. Sounds so cheesy, Andrew. Andrew Morris, how are you?
Good, thanks, Jim. Yep, I come from the land down under, as Minute Work's saying.
Yeah, I got to come up with a better – I got to come up with some better phrases for you, something like the guy with a bunch of power cells on his roof, or – the guy who took 4 weeks off and skied all over the world, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, just don't call me a rock star like you were in the pre-chat, because that just makes me sound tall or something like that.
It's very good. Well, we're glad.
I think it was 4 months, Jim.
Well, I was trying to be kind, Mike.
Yeah, four months in 2008. That's the best year I've had in a long time.
Yeah, I'd say.
4 months. I'd say. Actually seven, you know, if you ask my boss.
I need to get on that work plan, take 4 months off and go see Australia. Of course, that voice that you just heard, Mike Howard, and Mike is over at JPEG to Raw, and that's jpegtoraw.com. Of course, aspiring podcaster, and is always calling me with new ideas for podcasts. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
Doing great. We're getting rain here, too, and the weather is cooling off.
Nice.
We're gonna it is. I love fall. I love spring. I think we're going to head out for some fall, taking some fall color photography this weekend.
Very cool. Yeah, it's a good time, and it is. With the leaves changing, you know, we had a lot of flooding around here in this area with the Missouri this summer, and any trees that were close to the Missouri, of course, that got flooded are now dead. You would think, you know, water, a foot of water over the roots of a tree, you know, you'd think, oh, that water, the tree would love it. Actually, the tree breathes from its roots, and that water cuts off the oxygen. So all the trees are dying on the other side of the river from us. And it's going to be a sad, within a year, though, most of them, I bet 90% of them will be dead. And that area will have to regrow. But it's so not there, but I know in a large section of the country. And years ago, we went down to Branson, Missouri, this time of year. And oh my gosh, Mike, Branson is fabulous for
fall foliage. Say that 10 times fast. So it's beautiful. Atlanta have similar tree changing colors type stuff?
We do. You know, we have evergreens. We have trees that change the colors and stuff. I'll probably head up into the Georgia mountains a little bit. You know, within an hour of here, I'm northeast of Atlanta. Within an hour of where I am, you know, we'll be up in the mountains, Georgia mountains. I mean, as much as they are mountains.
Yeah.
And have some good colors up there.
Very cool. And of course, your podcast is doing really well, skyrocketing up, soon to be a number one podcast on iTunes, right, JPEG?
I think we got a ways to go. I was checking out another podcast the other day, and it had 12,000 subscribers.
Wow.
So we got a long way to go to ever get to that.
Yeah. That's good stuff. Tuesday nights, right? You guys are Tuesday nights?
Yes. Okay.
Tuesday nights at what time?
8 p.m. Eastern.
Okay. Good stuff. So 8 p.m., 7 p.m. Central, 5 on the West Coast. You know, guys, let me talk about this. It's been interesting over the last year, and as I've been on the Home Server Show for 3 years now, a lot of our listeners are from the Midwest and the East Coast, and there seems to be some out on the West Coast, but they don't seem to be as vocal. I mean, Mike, let me ask you, as you've been looking at your numbers or your statistics, do you see kind of a similar pattern, or have you seen that at all?
Yeah, you know, actually, I'm seeing more come from Europe than I am from, like, California.
Oh, really?
Which is kind of weird, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, I think mine are more slanted toward central U.S. to western U.S., like Andrew down in Australia, and then Europe.
Yeah. And I haven't checked our stats in Europe, but certainly if I look at our map like I have in the past, it seems like the greater Midwest – and all the way over to our East Coast, and then Australia. We do really well in Australia as well. And so part of that is I'd like to get some more Australia listeners, to like Rennie out there in chat right now, who's up in Perth. I would like to get – because it's middle of the afternoon for them when we do it here, you know, in the afternoon or in the evening here in the Midwest. So kind of cool. So hey, you Australian listeners out there, we'd like to hear from you. If you know, you got some comments or some questions about the show, podcast at theaverageguy.tv. Nice.
Sorry. If I'm disgracing the nation, let me know.
Yeah, no, you're doing great, Andrew. It's good to have you on. And as I look at those stats, you know, we pick up quite a few. You know, most of the population of Australia, right, lives on the coasts. And so there's lots of little dots around that as folks have. Oh, I'm sorry, Rennie. It's Brisbane. Sorry, not Perth. I don't know what I was thinking of. I
must Brisbane. Have
seen, yeah, I know. Brisbane, right? Not Brisbane. Yeah, yeah. We say Brisbane here in the U.S., but Brisbane, right? All right. So tomato, tomato. Ooh, I just pissed off everybody in Australia. All right, let's get started. Just a note. Just a note, it seems like Skype has been updating every other day for us recently. Whatever's going on at Microsoft is in high gear, and I've never seen Skype have as many updates as we had. It seemed like it was 1.1 just a couple weeks ago, or 1.11, and then 1.15, and then 1.19, and today is 1.24. They are moving. So if you're a Skype user and you haven't downloaded the most recent upgrade, I don't know. Does it seem like it's getting any better with the upgrades? Christian, do you notice any difference?
They're putting all those Microsoft security updates in. I don't know. I was kind of – well, I was starting the call for the recording tonight, and I was on 5.3, and all of a sudden it just froze, booted me. And I started Skype back up, and all of a sudden it's like, installing Skype 5.5. And I'm like, that's really cool. I didn't tell you to. Goodbye. Yeah.
But you probably should have a long time ago. We probably should have made you get on 5.5.
Yeah, I know. Well,
same version seemed to be better working on Skype.
It seems this might have been my issue.
Yeah.
You know, Christian, that's the same thing I was complaining about a few weeks back. Remember that, Jim, where I said Skype seemed to just update all by itself?
Yeah, no, it's certainly more aggressive about its updating.
It's magical.
And, yeah.
But especially when you're halfway through a conversation.
That's what it was. I was in a conversation.
Yeah.
But I think I've seen that with these updates, it does seem to be getting a little better. And Jim, you know I've been a huge critic of Skype lately. I'm actually encouraged by seeing
it. You've been throwing it into the ground.
But I'm actually
retro, and that it's that's going Windows 8. Out and that it's all about Google Plus and that for, you know, us people under 18, we have no right to have audio communication.
Well, you missed something else that you must not been on when you heard is your what I guessed your password was.
Oh.
Teletubbies.
Oh, oh, that just sets a tone, doesn't it? Oh.
This show is going downhill.
Just kidding.
Finish it up, Mike.
I'm actually encouraged to see somebody been criticizing Skype. Encouraged to see all these updates because for me it is starting to get a little better.
Do you guys think it has anything to do with Google Plus? I mean, it does, right? It's got to. They've got to be kind of now thinking we're not the only ship in the harbor when it comes to video, audio, and video. Think, Andrew?
I think they've been the leader for so long that I don't reckon they would want to be that worried by it, to be honest.
Really? So you don't think that's why the updates are coming? So do you think it's just a Microsoft actually paying attention to the platform?
Yeah, I think it's just that they're giving you a bit of love.
Okay.
I think Skype were probably because who owned it previously? PayPal, wasn't it? I think PayPal or whoever the previous
owner was. They were first owned by eBay.
eBay.
And then
eBay.
Then back to a venture capital company and then sold to Microsoft.
Yeah, look, I think it probably lost a bit of love for a while and you know, Microsoft are probably giving it the love that it needs at the moment. Every time I've used Google Plus, I haven't been terribly impressed with it. So I think, you know, in lieu of Google Plus being a true competitor, Skype's still got it, in my view.
We use Google Plus this weekend, or we use it every weekend for Rich's Random podcast generator on the weekends when we record that. And, you know, one of the complaints I've had about Google Plus is the incessant amount of clicking that you get out. It seems like when you add more than two people, this clicking in the background starts, and I could not figure out what that was, and still don't have any idea. It did in last week's show; it was there, and then by halfway through the show, it quit. But you kind of miss it if you're not listening for it, right? It's just in the background kind of thing. But doing the recording, you know, I noticed that stuff, and so there's something going on with Google Plus. They still got a ways to go to get that thing nailed down. But you know what? I'll be honest, the last 4 or 5 weeks we've done Skype and have had very few problems with it. Tonight, Christian, if you'd been on 5.5, you probably wouldn't have had any problems getting in. And our audio and video right now is fantastic. So I don't know. Maybe they're making some headway on it, and it's going to be a quality product going forward. I know more and more people are using it all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, one question, Jim, before we leave Skype is, you know, weren't they bringing it into Facebook? And you and I tried that out. Actually, it's probably been 2 months ago now. But I really have not seen any more movement on that. I wonder what's happening there.
It's not gotten. There's been so many other changes on Facebook and so many people kind of rallying against Facebook. I've expected a group to start up that's Occupy Facebook, you know. I think it's gotten missed, Mike. I mean, it's – or maybe that crowd is – not savvy enough to use it.
They made it pretty easy.
Yeah. Go ahead, Andrew.
My take on the Facebook Skype integration, because when we talked about it last time, I couldn't actually see any of the options. And I think you got to actually sign into Facebook with Skype to get it to activate. So you've now got the Facebook tab in Skype. So when I did that, I then got the video option. So maybe people are missing it.
Oh, all right. That's a good catch, maybe, if that's the case. I don't know. Yeah. It looked good when we used it. Mike, you and I used it, and the video quality was dynamite, and it worked out real well. So, but you're right. Maybe people aren't aware that that Facebook has it integrated in. They made it kind of stink about it when it first came out. A few people tried it. Then all of a sudden, they started changing their UI, and I think they got distracted away.
Yeah.
From the conversation. So anyways, if you haven't tried, if you're an average user and you haven't tried Skype, you know, we use it every week. And of course there's some incredible, video conferencing capabilities point to point, especially from family. I know, Mike, you have the group option and you use that group option. You actually unite your family together, right? And talk.
We do. I have a niece in Guam. I have, family all over the U.S. and we connect that way.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Christian, do you, besides this, for this podcast and other stuff, how much Skype usage do you get during the week, average?
Oh, I get a lot. It's yeah. always running. I'd say I'm using it probably at least 1 hour a day, okay. with non-business stuff. So, I mean, I'm always getting random messages from people. So,
are you using video for friends that are close by, high school friends that yeah. are close by?
Yeah, definitely.
You guys just kick on the video and mm-hmm. do it that way. And
yeah, it's homework, you know, yeah. anything.
Oh, nice. Yeah. yeah, that's a great way to do it.
I use it for a friend close by. My wife who's upstairs.
yeah. Yeah, me too. Although we won't do video. She will refuse to do video for that connection. It's only instant message. And Mike, I think I talk to you at least twice, maybe three times a week.
Yeah.
This and Andrew and I do a lot of IM. Of course, Andrew, your schedule yeah. is 16 or 17 hours ahead of me. And so we seem to be awake a lot at the same hours.
I think that's because you're more of a night owl than I'm allowed to be.
yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true. But I've made sure I leave up your time zone window so I know, you know, mm. I kind of know what time I'm hitting you. And honestly, guys, I find that I leave messages in Skype as well. So I know, you know, Mike, you may not be there. I'm going to type the instant message anyways, knowing you're going to get that the next time you log in. So that's another convenient way of using that. So yeah, Andrew, you and I think we have a running conversation that goes the whole week.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, even the other night, I mean, I think you sent me one at 12:30 your time saying, oh, what a day type thing. And I'm just like, well, if you're still awake at 12:30, I can't really help that.
yeah, well, it's midnight or one most nights for me. And then I'm up at 6. I don't probably sleep as much as I should, but anyway, so yeah, if you've been waiting for that, I mean, I imagine most of our listeners are already using Skype in some way, but it's getting better. So we'll have to keep our eyes open for what's going on Skype. All right, just a quick announcement. I mentioned this last night on the Home Server Show, but I'll announce it again. I am buying my wife an iPhone 4S. Okay, next story.
what's that? I missed that.
Yeah, we're going to break down. And, you know, she's currently on a BlackBerry. And it came to me and said, I really don't know a phone to pick. And of course, I'm an Android guy. And I love my Android phone for the most part. I've had some trouble with it lately. People have heard me say that if you listen to the show. But I don't know if I'm ready to move away from it yet. And so she was like, what should I have? And I don't with the way Android has been for me, I'm not sure I want to field those support calls from her for an Android device. And an iPhone, in my opinion, for the most part, is just one of those stable working devices. And most of the staff at the church that she works at is iPhone friendly. And mm-hmm. so right there, they're installing Macs. They're starting to talk about using iPads. And I thought, why fight it, right? Let's put her on an iPhone. And then the second reason would be because now I'll have an iPhone in the house that if I want to try something out and compare the iPhone versus the Android, I'll have a device to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bought an iPhone today too.
No.
No, of course I did not.
Yeah, it's one of the ones out of China called an iPhone that actually runs Android, right, Mike?
yeah. But yeah, I don't know if you want to head into these yet, but you touched on two news stories, and we can get to them later, that kind of fit with that. And that's BlackBerry's outage. You know, your right. wife having a BlackBerry. They've been having a terrible outage.
Was just their IM, right? Or was it the whole network?
I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah. All
right.
And it started in Europe, and it made it over to here.
Yeah, that's kind of the kiss of death for BlackBerry, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, you would think that with everybody moving to iPhones, like your wife, or to Android, like me, because I came from a BlackBerry too, that they would not have the same level of customers on their service.
Yeah,
and they wouldn't have these problems.
It's dropping like a rock.
It is, but so you'd think they'd have extra capacity.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, this was one of their main switches or something went down, and the switch over to a backup did not work.
Hmm. They had some big faith issues too, didn't they? I mean, with all the rights in the UK, when they found out that the rights were being coordinated using BlackBerry, I know they shut down a lot of the network then as well. So, you know, whether this, you know, who's to say it wasn't a denial of service comeback at, you know, the actions for that if it originated in Europe.
They're saying right now they don't think it was the hacker, but yeah, I mean, it could be.
Could have been Steve Jobs ghost coming after all of
his. I think by the time Steve Jobs passed away, they were no longer worried about BlackBerry.
No, I don't think anybody's worried about BlackBerry.
No, and it's a shame.
Except BlackBerry.
That is true. Very true, Chris.
Yeah. All right.
When I had my BlackBerry, and to this day, I still think it's the best little keyboard for typing messages. I can crank out messages, I think, faster than I can on my Android phone. So
yeah.
It's a shame.
The founder had to come out and apologize, of course, for the outage and, said he let him down. How would you like to be – I mean, the things are moving so fast now with technology. You can be the founder of a company. It can skyrocket to the top. I mean, at one point, BlackBerry was near the top when you talked about smartphones, right? They were the leaders. They were the front runners in the smartphone market. And you can debate with me whether a BlackBerry is a smartphone or not. It's okay. But let's just say they were a leader. So they've gone to the very top, and now the writing's on the wall and they're on the way out, right? I mean, they can't survive this, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is just close to the death for them. For if you were on that system and you had these problems and you're thinking about switching, why not switch?
Yeah.
But to that point, Jim, the cycle for a lot of people is a 2-year cycle because you get in the contract, a 2-year contract, maybe a 1-year. So I got my BlackBerry 3 years ago, and everybody at work loved that thing, and because I'd walk around showing how great it was. And when I got off of it, I moved to an Android, but in the meantime, tons of people were switching over to BlackBerry in the office after seeing mine, and now they're all jealous of the Android I have.
Yeah.
So it's in that short period of time, they've gone from really a leader to now you wonder how long they can survive.
Right. Yeah. I give it maybe 5 years before they are really irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Christian, go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, I was just going to say, do you think the failure of the Playbook had anything to do with the phone platform starting to die as well?
No, I don't. Mm. I think it was on its. I think it's been a forgotten has been for a year or two, and there's just so much talk around the iPhone and Android, and I mean, you can't even. It's hard for even like something like the webOS to creep its way in. There's just not a lot of room out there for all that, and it's just they didn't innovate fast enough on their phones. If they had come out with something cooler, faster, I don't know if even that would have saved them. I don't know. Christian, you're not, you're still, you haven't made a choice or you haven't moved off your Winmo 6.5, right? You're still there?
I still have my wonderful.
And when are you going to make a change?
Well,
I mean, what's this
well,
is, you're like an oxymoron with this phone because you are not. You're a tech head. You're a guy who's upgrading all the time, and yet you've got this ancient phone.
See, the issue is I still have 6 months until my contract is up for upgrade on here. That's
all right.
The first issue.
All right.
I mean, 6.5 is not terrible. It still does everything I need to, which I've probably said about 10 podcasts now. And it's only really epically failed on me once when it kind of deleted everything and I had to get a backup off Outlook. But I mean, it makes calls, it sends messages, it does internet, it reads email. I mean,
but you must have bought that at the very tail end of them actually selling those, right? I mean, you had to be the last guy to buy Winmo 6.5.
No, this was actually originally my dad's phone, and he got this like the second it came out, thinking it was cool stuff.
Yeah.
And then he saw the Evo, and he's like, oh, yeah, this is your phone. I'm like, oh, yeah, thanks.
So Gary made a mistake? Is that what you're saying?
Well, Gary made an advancement because he was thinking he was going to stay with Windows. And then here's like on Gary's chart for things to buy, it's like something that has Windows. And as soon as it's something that has a big screen, it's like instant purchase. So screen and operating system, like if it was running Linux and it had a 5-inch screen, he'd be like, all right, it's time to buy, folks.
All right.
So he loves big touchscreen phones.
He gives into the screen, huh?
Yeah, 4.3-inch plus and you got him.
Yeah. Well, I could see why he went with the Evo.
Yeah, I can see that.
For sure.
Yeah.
And that's been a pretty good phone as well.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he's interested in that Playbook, a Samsung Note or whatever it is, that 5-inch mm-hmm. 5-inch phone.
Yes, yeah.
So maybe you'll get his Evo.
Who knows?
If you couldn't see, if you're listening and you couldn't see that, that's Christian giving us the I don't know look. All right. Well, hopefully that phone comes in tomorrow. So this is, we're recording on the 13th, Thursday the 13th. They've said and have shipped, they sold a million of those things in the first batch. And so she'll be moving off. She's had her BlackBerry for 3 years. And I kind of coached her into an iPhone. And I think that's going to be a great phone for her. And if it's not, we'll switch at some point. My contract comes due pretty quick, and if she really hates it, I'll probably end up switching with her. So I wouldn't mind going back to an iPhone for a while, and I don't know if that'll be my permanent phone. And Mike, I know that just like stabs you right in the heart.
I'm starting to feel an upset stomach.
Hope you didn't have dinner recently.
I like that. Yeah. It's just funny how, you know,
I was looking at a bug climbing right over me.
Yeah.
There's a bug right up there.
Yeah.
And what you just said was more disgusting.
It's funny. I know you're joking about it.
Yeah.
Not really. But it's funny how we get so kind of caught up, and these are just phones. You know, they're just a phone, but
us against them.
We spend a lot of time talking about it. I mean, think about how much we've talked about it on the podcast. And so
yeah, you know what's funny is I say all that, but our show we just had, the lady's computer died right before the show. She did the whole – she was a guest. She did the whole thing from an iPhone.
Yeah, yeah.
We had to cut the video, yep. But she did the rest of it from an iPhone.
Yeah, we did a Spartan Radio podcast last week, and I was in the Sky Harbor Airport. You know, I started the podcast from there, and one of the guests was doing it right off our iPhone. And she had it – there were three gals, and they were just sitting there, and they put it on speakerphone on Skype on the iPhone, and it was great. I mean, the audio, the sound quality was excellent. So it's a pretty good phone. And this, I guess the camera on the new 4S is just incredible. So,
yeah.
So that was one of my wife's requirements, is a really good camera and that kind of
– And what is that, an eight megapixel?
Eight,
do you know?
8 megapixel, but I think it's got some really good software. You know, there
does on phone HDR and stuff like that too, Mike.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
It does so, what?
On phone HDR and everything.
It doesn't do real HDR. It's going to do. The only way to do real HDR is with three to plus images. You can't do that with one image from an iPhone.
We've asked the camera that. It can take three different exposures, right?
Yeah. I mean, you could do that with any of your camera phones.
Yeah.
Wow. But you know, all that said, that think about what you just said. You had a conference call with people on Skype from a phone. That was unheard of back in the BlackBerry days,
right?
Their heyday. Right. So whether it's an iPhone, whether it's the Samsung Galaxy S2, I mean, these things are getting incredibly powerful.
Yeah, no, they really are. And the next leap. We've got to get better bandwidth out to these phones. So I think the next leap is. You know, we're talking 4G, but it's kind of pseudo 4G at this point. That bandwidth still isn't great. So I think the next improvements come in the network. And so it'll be nice to see those.
I'd still like it if we could get 4G in Buffalo.
Yeah, or 4G in Omaha. We don't know. There's 4G on Verizon, but no 4G on Sprint. And these floods from the summer knocked out 20 towers. Down between here and Kansas City. And so the upgrade was planned for this fall, but they had to push it back because they're spending, you know, money to fix these towers. So at least that's the rumor we've heard. Who knows if that's actually going to happen. But ironically, I got 4G on Sprint on the runway at Omaha at Epley Airfield. Before I left, and I'm like, I got 4G, and then we took off. So it was gone at that point. So one of the things I mentioned on the home server show last night, I am interested in, I'm looking for a very small form factor PC that I'm going to pair with a Drobo and make a Windows Home Server 2011 box out of. And when I say small, I mean like 7 inches small. So maybe 3 inches high, 7 inches wide, and up to 12 inches deep. And so I've been taking suggestions from people who might have seen something like this or have some suggestions for me on what they'd like to see me pair that with the Drobo. Cost, of course, I'm not made of money, even though I have a pair of pliers pinching a dollar back there. I'm not made of money, and it's so cost is a consideration. It's not everything. But the idea would be one of the minimum requirements is USB 3 coming out of the back so that I could pair it with this Drobo S. And then we'll see what goes. That may be my next, not maybe, I think that's going to be my next Windows Home Server build. So if you are, if you bought some mini PCs before, you know, you have some ideas of what you'd like to see me build from that or what you'd like to see me buy, I'm kind of taking best suggestions. Mm-hmm. Easiest way to do that, head over to Facebook, type in the Average Guy Podcast and drop a note on our Facebook page and I'll try and put those all together. And we're also doing a forms post over at the Home Server Show. I almost said theaverageguy.tv. And I'm going to take, I'm going to probably take 3 or 4 weeks and put all this stuff together, make a post out of it, and then make some kind of decision. So you can follow along with us over there. Guys, any comments on that?
AMD E450 Brazos processor. Integrated everything on one board.
All right. Send me the link. Throw the link out on Facebook so I can take a peek at it.
Yep.
Yeah. What would really be cool, guys, is about a 2-inch high, 8 inches wide and about 12 inches deep that would just look like a little pedestal on this Drobo would sit on top of. If you've seen a Drobo, they're about 7 inches wide. I think it's seven by seven or 7 by 8, depending on how many drives. And they're about 12 inches deep. And I kind of want to make it look like Drobo had a unit back in the day that they paired it with that would look like it went with the Drobo. And that's kind of the idea I'm trying to get behind this is just a good little unit that would go together, look together that I could pair with the Drobo S. So if you got anything, let me know. Like to do it. Go out to Facebook, search for the Average Guy Podcast and drop that note on Facebook. All right, Christian. We've been waiting long enough. You've always got a great deal, a great speed tip, and some other news. Why don't you get started with Christian's Corner?
All right. So pretty cool deal of the week. Probably on Tuesday afternoon, Newegg and most of the major retailers got a nice fresh stock of AM3 Plus 8 cores from AMD. They also have 6 cores in the new AM3 Plus line, but a fantastic price on the their high-end 8-core. For $280, you can get their 3.6 gigahertz 8-core, and that's without turbo clock and the multiplier being taken into consideration. So at like stock speed, you could get this thing at 4 gigahertz on 8 cores, which for $280 is pretty amazing. And that's up on Newegg now. That uses the 32-nanometer chip die process and has a double L2 and L3 cache of 8 megabytes. So it's going to be pretty lightning fast. Unfortunately, they've already sold out. So the only 8-core still available right now at Newegg is the lower end 8-core, which is 3.1 gigahertz and is also a double 8 megabit cache. So more of the same deal, a bit of a more reserved clock speed. And that comes in at $220. And also available now is the AM3 Plus 6-core. The primary advantage being that it's a 95-watt CPU instead of 125-watt. But I'm predicting that they're going to have the 95-watt models of the 8-core out soon. So these are pretty great prices, especially considering the 8-core 3.6 model is actually $20 cheaper than what their 1090 T 6-core was when it first came out. AMD's first 6-core Black Edition was around $300 when it came to market, and that was AM3. This is AM3 Plus, larger cache, faster chipset, smaller die, and is $20 cheaper with 2 more cores. So that's a pretty neat deal. Most existing AM3 Plus boards that have a 6-core or a Phenom 2 quad-core support the AM3 Plus platform, so you'll be able to pop these in and upgrade if you want to do a direct upgrade. I know my beast of a motherboard has a specialized BIOS on the ASUS website that gets that's designed especially for the AM3 Plus platform. So if I wanted to upgrade to that, I would just flash a BIOS update really quick and pop it in. So that's pretty exciting from the speed end. And I think that's going to be a really big price contention point and huge competitor against Intel, because already within a day, the AM3 Plus top line was sold out. So that's a pretty neat deal. If you got an AMD box, you're interested in building one, or you're just super excited about 8 cores in a computer, this is the way to go for economy, price, speed.
Christian, how many, so like on a i7, Intel Core i7, how many cores does that have?
A regular Intel iCore 7 has 4 cores and 4 hyperthreads, which in Task Manager shows up as 8 cores, but it's not truly 8 cores. It just means there's 4 cores which with a hyperthread in each one. This is truly 8 cores. Intel's, I want to say, i7-980FX, which is like their $1,200 model, I believe is the only one that's either 6-core or 8-core. But okay. It's their extreme edition, and I want to say it's 6-core, but it might be 8-core.
And Mike, you're running a 6-core right now, right?
My broadcast server is a 6-core. My CPU, which I already have a wish list set up in on Newegg, I'm close to buying a new system there, had a 6-core in it. But now that Christian's pointed this out, I just added while we're talking, this 8-core to the wish list.
And the 3.1 gigahertz?
No,
the 8120, the big one, huh?
The 3.6. Oh. Yeah, you know, it's like he said, it's out of stock. Right. But I added it to the wish list, and I'll just watch it.
Okay.
Yeah, they're gonna get big stock of that within the next week. I mean, that's huge.
And that's 280, right? 280 yep. bucks.
Mm-hmm. 280 bucks. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a little more expensive than I was gonna spend, but you know, I need a new system. This Phenom 4 cores is showing its age, and it's DDR2. So you can get 16 gig of DDR3 for like 80 bucks,
right? Yeah,
that's featured on previous deals of the week.
Does software really take advantage of all those cores? I mean, really?
You know, some does. You know, like Lightroom, Photoshop, some of the video editing software I have will. Some of it won't.
Okay.
So,
and how do you know? How do you really know if it's?
I look at Task Manager.
Okay, as it's running. And so Mike, what you're looking for is then all threads. So I kick off a process. I run the application. I'm doing whatever, right? I'm transcoding some video. I look at Task Manager. I want to see all those threads running. Is that right? Is that how I check?
Right. So, for instance, on my 6-core broadcast server, I will jump a video over there to process through QuickTime, you know, Apple's QuickTime program. And only 1 core is pegged out. All the others sitting there almost doing nothing. So that's an indication that QuickTime is not taking advantage of the multi-cores.
And Christian, what are you running in your beast there?
I'm running the Black Edition 1090T, which is AMD's. That was AMD's first 6-core Black Edition. That's the top. That was the first 6-core that came out that was their Black Edition model, and then the last model in that series was the 1100T on the high end, which was literally the same exact thing as the 1090T with like 0.1 more gigahertz. Okay. And that's going to end the AM3 6-core plus line. I mean, the AM3 6-core line. That's done now.
It's end of the road.
Right, and okay. that... Their new road is now the AM3 plus 6 and 8 cores. So
crazy. And a lot cheaper. I shouldn't say a lot, but significantly cheaper than Intel, right?
Well, compared to getting a 6 or 8 core from Intel. Yeah.
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 All right. Very cool.
Yeah. I deleted the 6 core out of my wish list.
Wow. Just like that, Mike.
Just like that.
On the show.
I'm that persuasive. So, moving on to the speed tip of the week. This pleased me greatly to get an auto update in my laptop. This was super exciting when I saw, please update to Adobe Flash Player 11. And I'm like, oh, what boring security features are there going to be this time? Read the list. Native 64-bit browsing. Yeah, I've been waiting for that for about 4 years. Windows Vista with 64-bit browsing. Yeah, I'll take that. Enhanced H.264 audio and video playback. Yeah, that sounds pretty good too. GPU acceleration. This seems to fit with Internet Explorer 9. So simply put, it's a major update. You got to get it. if you're on a 64-bit OS, you can now ditch your 32-bit Internet Explorer because you'll be able to run your YouTube and all your Flash stuff, which was the primary reason I stayed on 32-bit, was because not all my stuff ran without Flash. Now I've completely removed it from my taskbar. It's going to really take advantage of the GPU acceleration we're seeing in the newer browser series, and it's really, really a nice change of pace to see the 64-bit being support across Windows, Mac, and Linux. So,
Christian, will it uninstall 10 before you?
Okay. It's like an auto update. It's just bam, it's in there. 64-bit playback is smooth, and I'm excited to be able to use my 64-bit version of Internet Explorer now as well.
Oh yeah, I guess that does kind of change the rules for IE.
It changed the whole game. I totally unpinned my 32-bit from the taskbar.
Are there any other considerations when we talk 32 versus 64 for IE besides Flash?
You're going to get a bit more performance with the 64-bit.
But any other 64-bit program? Any other negative limitations that things we're still waiting for? In IE, can I just go IE 64-bit now and be pretty confident everything's going to work?
Yeah, all the
So that would work on the new Windows 8 preview, right? Because that'll
work on there as well. Yep.
Okay, I know that was in beta when I was trying that, but that would kind of power IE. Okay, all right, that's interesting. Wow, good stuff.
Yeah, so
I might have missed that.
Yeah. Go to git.adobe.com/flashplayer if you didn't get the auto update and pop it in there and have a ball.
Andrew, you going to say something?
Oh, I missed it as well.
Yeah. Well, that kind of snuck up. I'll be honest, Christian. That didn't make, nobody made a lot of noise about that. And maybe I'm not listening in the right circles.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate because it's pretty huge for Adobe.
Yeah.
Is
it just me though? Or did it just quietly roll out?
No, I think it quietly rolled out. I didn't see much on the news feeds today either, but I mean, that's 64-bit. I remember when 7 first came out, people were haranguing Adobe about 64-bit support, and they just didn't have it. So, I mean, there were no solutions until the beta Flash Player 11 came out, which I think I had grabbed for a day or so. But this is what I've been waiting for. So this brings Adobe from the IE7, IE8 era to the IE9, Firefox 7 and 8, and Chrome 10 or 11 or whatever version it's on now. So,
okay. Cool. Yeah. Good stuff.
And other news to peruse, Quixtar plans to settle in the dust as our lovely friend from Netflix CEO Reed Hastings decided that Quixtar was going to be canned after you look at the stock market graph where it looks like a big vertical slope that you could slide down in a playground. So does this mean I'm going to see customers coming back? I doubt it because they still haven't changed the price modeling at all. It's still the same prices, but they're not going to split yet. So I'm interested to see if waiting it out even longer will result in the prices going back to what they originally were.
I think eventually we're back to a single model and somebody gets fired.
They're doing a single website, aren't they now, with a single, are they combining the queues? You're talking about the thing that Netflix was doing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think they were going to split the queues. So you'd have to have a queue for Quixtar and a queue for Netflix. For the streaming, are they going to combine those queues back together into one login?
That's my understanding of it, was that they were just getting rid of Quixtar altogether. But yeah, who are they going to fire? I mean, it was the CEO who pushed this. They clearly were going to jump. They were jumping right into it, thinking, "Oh yeah, this is going to make them more money," and they're really suffering from it.
Well, when enough stock market money is lost, somebody's going to have to pay for it.
It's more than halved already.
Yeah, yeah. I think a head's going to have to roll somewhere, and because they won't just be. I don't think they'll just be able to come back and say, I mean, they already sent out the email. We talked about that 2 weeks ago, or maybe that was on Rich's show. But they sent out the email, and so they've apologized. We're sorry. Come back.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things, you know, Mike, I know you've been kind of an advocate, right, of like that was the stupidest thing ever, right?
I don't think I said too much about it. I think.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I'll say
it. I did think it was stupid.
That was the stupidest thing ever.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody I talked to is like, you know, even the local video store here was, you know, they put up a little sign that said something to the, you know, some cute little phrase like, you know, we're never going to change our prices on you or something like that. But yeah, I think somebody's got to get fired and then eventually it'll come back together. I just don't know how they can survive this, and they just continue to lose market share very, very quickly. And Redbox has been the beneficiary of this. I mean, I think if we look back, I haven't looked at Redbox's numbers, but everybody has said, well, I'm just going to cancel and I'll just get my videos at Redbox. You know, you can, yep. they're available everywhere. You can find them in every street corner. They're in Walmart. You can just pop up to a Redbox. Now that you can't get some of the, you know, some of the older stuff that that you want to watch on Redbox, but I don't know.
To be honest, I don't use, I have Netflix. I have a Netflix account, but we don't use it a ton. What we end up doing, and we don't use Redbox, we end up getting all our movies through Xbox, the Zune Marketplace.
Hmm. All right.
And yeah,
it's a good way to do it.
From a cost perspective, it's definitely not the best way to go. But from a convenience standpoint, you just sit on a couch and say, oh, look, Friday night, we got you know, new movies out. Bam, you start playing it. If it's on DVD, it's probably on Netflix, on the Zune Marketplace on Xbox.
Yeah. Well, my daughter worked through right before school started. She was trying to finish up, you know, she was watching the Stargate SG-1 series. And we've watched that already once all the way through as a family. And she skipped out. The first time we did it, she skipped out on some episodes. So she restarted at the beginning of the summer and then was trying to get through the entire series. And so with 2 weeks left to go, she is watching like 8 episodes a day, which is why my bandwidth was through the roof. The last, you know, I ran 400 gig of bandwidth out through my internet connection in the month of August. Because she was watching, you know, just show after show after show. But that was, you know, that's something you can do on Netflix. You can just sit down and crank out a whole series.
Yeah.
And it was good for that. So, you know, we took the DVD. We kind of slowed things down and canceled the streaming and went with the DVD. And that's, so far, that's worked for us. We, you know what, in the fall and in the spring, we record a lot of TV. And so they end up watching that recorded TV as opposed to movies, and you know, Dancing with the Stars and Sing Off and Dancing and Singing and Singing and Dancing and whatever these, you know, how many shows are, and of course Castle. They just record and watch them. So anyways, okay. Andrew, no, Christian, do you have one more thing?
Well, for those webmasters who keep track on their domains, for those interested in adult community content, you can now pre-order your XXX domain address.
Sounds silly
extensions.
Coming from you, Christian.
I know, right? So I get this funny email.
So you registered BIOS mods already, Christian?
Yeah, BIOS mods.xxx. All those scandalous motherboard modders are getting kind of crazy on my site, so I had to give them their own extension, you know. But I get this funny email from Domain Monster, which is one of my domain address sponsors, and it's got this huge list of reasons why I should be buying an XXX domain, and everything from advantages for adult communities to buying it so that an adult community doesn't. And I'm sitting here thinking, why do I want to buy and protect this name when no adult community is going to want the name BIOS Mods?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I like that. Yeah. Protect their brand.
They may want the average guy, though, Jim.
Yeah, there's so many places we could go with that, and let's not.
I'm just saying you might want to get it.
The average guy .xxx. I don't know. No. Hey, Christian, how much was it, by the way? How much are those domains?
Let's go find out. I want to say it's $10, but
oh, so they're as cheap as all the other domains are.
Not as cheap. I mean, domains are ranging from. Oh, here we go. This will be great. Here's their homepage run here. I can. Oh, this is great.
Should you be looking at that, Christian?
As he keeps saying, "Oh, this is great."
they have these different levels of what they call sunrise, is when you get a new extension just coming out, and the caption is "Let's be adult about it," and then it says reasons to register an XXX domain. Then there's potential, safe, and visibility all in one paragraph. Then additionally, they have sunrise AT, sunrise AD, and sunrise SRB. So they have all these subcategories, but where is the price? Register. Pre-order my name. Okay, let's pre-order.
Christian's doing it. Here he goes. Live on the air.
As you see in the tables, we add up here a total number of years for all domains you register at once. I don't care. I just want the XXX single price. Thank you.
Gary's going to be looking at the credit card bill later. So you bought what?
I can't wait to pull that little sound snippet out of the, out of the show. And I just need an XXX price. Whatever that was.
All right. So this is telling me that a sponsored top-level registration for 1 year is $99.
Yeah, see, I thought they were more expensive. I thought
that to go to 10 years brings it down to $89 a year, and to bring it down to 25 years plus brings it down to $74 a year.
Yeah, I thought they were expensive going in. So I don't know. I think the marketing is interesting that they're, you know, it's a little bit of a mafia tactic, you know, protect, you know, hey, we'll just be around and protect you if you don't, you know, or you should buy this just so nobody else buys it. Well, like you said, for most domains, I'm sure there'll be a few that are exceptions, but for most domains, it's probably not a big deal. Are you saying say that again, Mike? Go ahead, Andrew.
Okay, Mike.
Are you saying the XXX people are not giving you honest marketing?
Yes.
True.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Andrew?
So with that scandalous note, Christian's Corner is now concluded.
Very nice. Thank you. It's great that the XXX at the end came at the end of Christian's Corner. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, we got the XXX email from my parents' bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
And it's like, I rang mum and I said, did you see that email? And she says, yeah, it sort of puts across the wrong message for a B&B, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I didn't get the email, and I'm wondering, I use Hover, and they don't, they're not selling those. And so I wonder if that, if I would, you know, if I'm, because I'm a Hover customer, if I'm left off that. It's kind of nice not to get it, right? But I went out there and checked the other day, and they are not selling those. Christian and I were talking about it, and so I went out and took a peek, and they're not selling them. So it's kind of nice if, you know, if you're buying a domain, it's a little bit more expensive out at Hover, but they've got real, and this sounds like a commercial, but it's not. They've got really a really nice management feature. And if you've used GoDaddy before, you just know what kind of nightmare GoDaddy is when you try and buy something there. I mean, there's crap everywhere on the screen, and then it's 40 clicks to get out of that thing. And, you know, so typically when on GoDaddy, when the site's $12, I pay $15 on Hover. And if you use a promo code from any one of those shows, Leo Laporte, you can get, you know, you can get 15% off, and that brings it down to 13 or whatever, $13.50. So it's real reasonable. So if you're registering your own domains, and again, this is not a commercial, but I do recommend you Hover, HOVER.com. It's a really decent place to register your domains. All right, Andrew, you told me right before, actually, this was one of our Skype messages over the course of the day. You got your Android phone modded in some way. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, like a lot of people, I found that with my HTC Desire, the stock ROM, I kept running out of space. The HTC is one of those phones. It's got about half a gig of RAM by default. So by the time you put a ROM on it and load up a few applications and a couple of versions of Angry Birds, you're running out of memory on a daily basis. And the other thing that was kind of lacking with this one is to go up to the current version of Android, which is Gingerbread, was going to require a ROM that can't be backed out from HTC. So I did a bit of snooping around and had a chat to one of the guys who's in the car club with me, and he suggested this ROM called Stock Gingerbread with Sense. Now, Sense is the interface that goes on the HTC Android platform. And yeah, I've found a couple of videos, ran through the process, and my phone now tells me I've got 700 meg available in RAM, which is awesome. So I can't see myself running out of space anytime soon. And performance wise, it's great, and just looks and feels exactly the way it did before.
So what was the process? I mean, without too much detail, but what do you got to do
the process is you do what they call rooting the phone. So that involves running a PC application, which gives you super user privileges on the device itself. Then you write a new bootloader to it using another Windows, using a Linux boot CD, and boot it up into a safe mode, copy a bunch of files across onto the SD card and install them.
All right.
I've been holding off for about a year on doing it, and my friend Brenton just turned around and said, you know, it's not as daunting as it sounds. It's quite easy. You do this, 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 and this, and here's a video with a guy explaining it. And, probably an hour and a half later, and I'd put one ROM on it, which I didn't really like, and then went and found another one. And this one's fantastic.
Now, what happens if the manufacturer or the service provider tries to send an update to the phone?
Oh, they block it with the ROM.
Okay.
So one of the popular ones, which support just about every handset on the market at the moment, is Cyanogen Mod, which is built from the Android standard code base. So that's available for pretty much everything. I know it supports my phone. It supports pretty much all the Samsungs, all the original Google phones, but it gives you pure Android. But, you know, very similar process, and there's plenty of wikis and videos out there on how to do it.
And then do they have updates do they periodically update, and is that done through the phone, or do you have to plug it back into your computer to make that happen?
I think they're over the air, okay. But I'm not sure. I've not run that ROM version. So
interesting. That might be worth a try.
Yeah. So, yeah. Is there a video you said that you can follow to do this?
Yeah. If you YouTube the handset that you've got and the ROM that you're looking to go to, there's usually a bunch of how-to videos that go step by step through the process.
Yeah. This is similar to what I did when I unlocked my phone to get the custom ROM on there.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was really daunted by it. You know, everyone was saying, "Oh, you got to copy files onto the micro SD card, and you got to boot it up holding down the volume key, and all this sort of rubbish." And
yeah,
I'm just looking at it going, "I don't think so."
Christian, it's not too much different than a modification to your BIOS, right? I mean, it's certainly a different process, but some of those, a few steps you got to follow, but it's not horribly complicated, right? I mean, the average guy. Maybe the average tech guy could pull that off?
No, the average guy could pull this off.
Okay.
It's all driven out of a GUI, and you know, the videos that we found step you through it, you know, literally click by click.
Okay. Yeah. Might be an interesting look. Maybe that's the next step for my Android phone is to ROM that out and get a different get a cleaner, I guess, is that the right word? Get a cleaner version of Android?
Cleaner, maybe something gives you better access to memory in the device as well.
Yeah, because I can't figure out how to move. To be honest with you, I got a huge SD card in there, and I can't find out how to use it.
Yeah, so by default with my phone, it only lets you move the data associated or part of the application and the data associated with it. And once you go to this this aftermarket ROM, it'll actually let you move the entire application out to the card.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And you notice it running faster?
No, it's about performance wise. It's maybe a little bit faster because it's gone up to a larger kernel, on the same processor. But in built into this mod, I can overclock the kernel now overclock the CPU to 1.5 gigahertz on a 1 gigahertz processor. And
does that run the phone pretty hot though?
I'm not going to do it. I'm not a fan of overclocking anything. So. But you can. There's a kernel application in it, so I can tweak the battery usage and the feel of it. So that'll, you know, modify how it performs as well against the battery life.
Hmm.
Yeah. you know, there's so much out there in the way of aftermarket ROMs. We've even had a few people with the HTC HD2, which in the US was sold as the HD Leo, I think, or HTC Leo, and that came out with WinMo 5.6, I think, and there was an HTC upgrade to version 6, and we've even got a bunch of guys at work now running Android on those.
Hmm. Okay.
Which takes it from being a great piece of hardware with a 4.3-inch screen and a 1 gigahertz processor to being, and you know, pretty average performance with that version of WinMo to running the latest version of Android, and yeah, it makes it new lease of life for a great piece of hardware.
All right. Cool. And you also said you got some HP touchpad news, right?
Yeah, well, when you were doing the intro to the show, I saw a couple of things come across Twitter, and the Cyanogen mod team have released their alpha release of Android for the touchpad. So,
I got mixed feelings about that. I'll be honest with you.
Me too. Yeah, look, I do as well, especially about taking a piece of hardware and putting something on it that's not proven yet.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't have any problem with what they're doing. I have problems with, because I've talked really highly of the WebOS in the past. And so to me, that's a little bit of, you know, and I like Android as well, but, you know, those are, I don't know. I just have mixed feelings about putting Android on a touchpad.
It's a bit of a partner.
Say that again. We're losing you for a second, Andrew. Hold on. We'll let Skype catch up here for a second and then see if we can get you back. Maybe your BitTorrents are going again. Let's just see if this is any better. No, it's not any better with Andrew. Is he skipping for you guys too?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Andrew, do me a favor. Cut your video off for a second. Let's see if we can get your feedback. We have lost you. Hopefully you can hear me. No. Oh, there goes the video. That's good. No, leave it off for a sec. Just leave it off so we can get your... you were skipping a lot on us. We couldn't even understand you. So try again. Yeah. Try again. Oh, shoot. Sorry, Andrew. We can't hear you.
Goodbye.
No, yeah. I'm hanging up on you now. No, just kidding. Let's see if that's any better. Oh, shoot. Hey, let me do something real quick, Andrew. Let me disconnect you. I'm going to bring you back in, and we'll see if we can reestablish this connection. All right? I guess he didn't get a choice. Now he's gone. He's probably like, that bastard. All right, here we go. See if we can bring him back in. Shoot, it was like the meat of the story, and then we got his phone. Andrew, just switch over to your phone. It cut over to his phone. This could be interesting. No, it failed. One more try. Christian, you have any issues with putting Android on an HP touchpad?
I have no issues with the framing HP hardware, but I don't know. I mean, if it wasn't like an essential piece of hardware, I wouldn't have an issue with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Other Jim in chat says that'll teach him to threaten WebOS.
Yeah, as soon as he started talking about it, he just... Andrew, can you hear us?
Yeah, you got me on the cell phone, though.
Yeah, that's it's maybe a little better of a connection.
Really? It sounds rubbish from here. Hang on, Skype failed, so it's just come back up.
Okay, go ahead and hang up and then rejoin the call when you get back.
All right.
Mike, would you take a touchpad and mod it with Android?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, you'd be all right with that?
Yeah, I have no loyalty to WebOS. Sorry, other Jim.
Well. Hey, let's talk while we're getting trying to get Andrew back. Let's talk a little bit of photography, because that's what we have you on here for. Of course, your podcast is doing real well. Talk a little bit about what you put in the notes.
Yeah, I have one piece of news. We went over this on my show, and this is something that may be good for the average photographer, either from a regular camera or even from a cell phone, and not just for taking pictures of people, but even text. There's a new unblur feature that Adobe is working on. They're not giving you any timeline on when it's going to come in Photoshop or anything like that, but that's the thought, that it'll eventually come in Photoshop. And the link here, and hopefully I'll put that in the show notes, shows a little demo that they did. I think it's a little bootleg video, so you might want to look at it soon before they take it off of YouTube. But it does some amazing cleanup of a photo. So they took a photo that was blurred because the person moved their hands or whatever while taking a picture, which happens a lot when you're taking cell phone pictures and even regular pictures. And they do have some algorithms that predict the movement that you did when you took the picture and undoes that. And the demo they show, if it does as good as what they showed in the demo, it is absolutely amazing what they can do with what was going to be a unusable picture. They also, in that same demo, do something like that with text. So it's text that you've taken, which, let's say in this case, I think it was a cell phone, took some pictures of a text, and the text was almost unreadable. And when they unblurred it, it brought it right back to, pretty, fairly sharp.
Wow. Mike, do you find in your photography, as you're taking photos, now you're a semi, let's call you a semi-pro, right? From a photographer standpoint, you're not a pro because you don't do it for a living.
Not a pro at all.
You're probably above your average point and shoot user, right?
Yeah, that'd be fair to say.
So semi-pro. Do you find that you would use something like that to save a picture from something that you didn't take? Because I imagine you take multiple shots of stuff, right, when you're taking pictures.
Yeah, and this probably – I can't say I wouldn't use it. I mean, if it's in Photoshop, there will be times when I take it. But, what I – to me, there when you get to a certain level of photography, what's acceptable as good is different than what it is for the average user. So if I'm starting off with crap, it just does not seem like I could get to good or great, let's say. But I think for the average photographer, especially if a cell phone can take good pictures for you, which in my opinion, they take okay pictures, not good pictures. But if that is the case, then this is something that may be very useful for those kind of people, because you can take what was an unusable photo and bring it back. Now, even with that, a good photographer, there's more to a photo than just the technical aspects. There's the emotion within the image. So if that emotion is there, you lost it because of the blur, you could bring it back to where you capture that. That could still, that is a good tool to have. And how often you use it, I don't know. I think it does take some horsepower, some computer horsepower. So this is not a feature, at least right now, they could put in the phone itself.
Right. But it's in Photoshop?
No,
it's coming in.
They're testing it. They've not given a date on when it will come out. But from what they showed in Photoshop, it looked in this demo, it was pretty far along.
Mike, do you have any idea of Photoshop's footprint in the average space? Right. I mean, I don't have Photoshop, but do most people that you know own a copy of Photoshop? First of all, how much does Photoshop cost? We talk about that all the time. People use that. The word Photoshop is synonymous with cutting something out of, right?
Right.
I Photoshop it in, right? It's a verb now.
Yeah, there's multiple levels of Photoshop. So let's talk about the one that most people would get is in the $600 to $700 range.
Yowza.
Brand new.
Yeah.
So, most of the photographers I know do own it, because if you're going to get into photography on a serious basis, you really need to be working your way to Photoshop. Now, what I would tell you, though, is probably, if that's a big sticker. I would say, start off maybe with Lightroom. Lightroom's going to do all your image management, tracking all your images. It can do the vast majority of stuff you're going to want to do as an average photographer. As you get more serious, though, there's things that Photoshop can do that it can't be done somewhere else. And there's other alternatives. There's GIMP. If you want to use GIMP, that's a free program that's available in Linux and Microsoft
and Windows.
Yeah.
So Christian, you like that? I talked to my artist son about that. He wasn't all that impressed with GIMP.
GIMP makes me very happy.
Oh, all right.
Okay. I keep it pinned to my start menu at all times.
All right.
And I would say, as somebody getting started that doesn't want to spend the $700 or whatever on Photoshop, that's a good alternative. Now, I'm more like your son, Jim, in that there's no comparison to Photoshop.
Yeah.
Photoshop, That's why it's almost turned into a verb now, the word Photoshop.
Yeah. No, it's not right. It's like Kleenex. It's aspirin. It's what we know, you know, it's a brand that we now we've turned into the action. So I'm going to Photoshop this.
So for me, unfortunately, you know, now Lightroom is out. What I tell people is you now need Photoshop and Lightroom is really, if you're going to get seriously into it.
You need both? Is that what you just said?
I would have both. Yeah. I'd use Photoshop for Lightroom for my image management and most of my editing. And then the stuff that I need further editing, I just jump out to Photoshop, do that, bring it back into Lightroom. The other thing is Lightroom makes dealing with RAW, and I, you know, as JPEG to RAW,
right.
What we're trying to do is, you know, one of the things we say is you should be taking images in RAW. Lightroom makes it so much easier to deal with RAW images than anything else.
All right. Wow. What about Paint? What is this Paint.net that I keep hearing about? What is that? Paint.net. Christian, do you know what that?
Paint.net's a open source cut down Photoshop style thing, isn't it? Christian's GIMP and Photoshop or Paint.net are very similar.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's just another free version of a very stripped down Photoshop.
Oh no, it's very advanced. It's been around for probably I'd like to say 6-8 years. Mm-hmm. Started off being a replica of Paint, MS Paint.
Right.
And they've built on it. And it's probably as powerful almost as Photoshop now.
Really? And it's free, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Mike, have you ever looked at Paint.net?
I have to look at it, but I find it hard to believe it's as powerful as Photoshop. You know, but you know, the other thing is when you get into Photoshop, it can be very overkill. Photoshop is one of those things that does so much that for the average person, 90% of what it does, you're not going to use. So that may be a good alternative for the average person. And, you know, there's Photoshop Elements, which is like a Photoshop Lite. So there's some other choices.
Okay. Mm. Well, and I'll admit the only editing tool I use is the Snippy tool on Windows 7.
I'm at that stage now too.
Yeah, that's all I have time for. So I'm just grabbing it. I'm taking it. And mostly, right, I'm doing blog stuff. So I'm just grabbing stuff to post in blogs.
So since I'm talking to somebody like you, because generally on our show, we talk to a little bit more advanced photographer. But, you know, if you're using a DSLR and you're shooting in RAW, I'm going to pretty much tell you that your images to show the true quality require editing. Straight out of the camera is not going to show its full potential.
Sure. Mm. Yeah. And Mike, you know, I don't, a camera phone is my, you know, my camera. And yeah, I don't take many pictures, to be honest. I curse myself for that because I know 20 years from now, I'm going to be like, dang it, I wish I'd taken more pictures. In fact, the move to the iPhone for my wife is to take more pictures, to have a reliable, good camera, good in quotes, air quotes, right? A good enough is what that means. Camera to be able to take more pictures, but I've got all that capability on my Android phone. I just don't think of pulling out and taking photos, and I don't know why.
But, you know, I think there's two sets of people, the ones who want to take snapshots, and then one who wants to take more of an art photo. And there's nothing wrong with either group. And sometimes you cross over into groups. You know, there's times when I take snapshots, and for snapshots, you know, the cell phone's fine. As a matter of fact, I take my cell phone with me when I go to take photos because I use it to get the GPS data, take the photo of where I'm at with my phone, get the GPS data off of that, and then enter that in the Lightroom later on.
Nice. Yeah. So you add the metadata to the picture later on. Your phone doesn't have that capability, or your phone, your camera can't pick up the metadata?
My camera does not, no.
Okay. Is it older? How old's your camera?
It is a little bit older. I'm not sure I don't remember what year it is. It's maybe 4 years old now. But I don't even know if all the SLRs have that capability yet. I know most of the point and shoots do.
Do you fill in most of the metadata for your pictures?
Yeah.
That's available to you?
I fill in quite a bit, but not most. Okay. I wouldn't say most. I fill in quite a bit.
That's kind of interesting because, you know, when I record the Home Tech podcast, what we're doing right here, and I drop it to Audacity. I edit it. It takes me about 15 minutes to edit the show. I edit it MP3. You know, I save it back out as an MP3. I save it to a file server, and then I upload it. Right? it has zero metadata in it, right? I mean, and when you export that file out as an MP3, you get about 25 different things you can fill in of dates and times and authors and all that other stuff, right? I mean, that was just kind of a nice thing about a digital file. Rich, on the other hand, when we do the Rich's Random Podcast Generator on the weekends, Rich edits that and makes sure people are saying the right things and spends a good amount of time. And then the other day I was noticing I was uploading it and all the metadata was there. And I was like, wow, sweet. But that, to me, that's the contrast. The photo is the same way, right? You have people who just are taking pictures, no maintenance. It is what it is. I want to post it to Facebook and share it with friends and call it good. And I think the word that you used here, which is very important, is you have people who take pictures for art, right? One is utility. The other is art, and they see photos as a piece of art. And that's kind of, that's the leg that you talk about a lot on your show, is these are photographers who are taking art pictures.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I'm kind of in the middle of you too, by the way, Jim. I do fill in some of the metadata on the Audacity, but not all of it. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Rich does a nice job on that. And he is a detail guy. And so I do always appreciate that, but it is a contrast. I do nothing. I mean, it's just zip, zap, zoom. It's up there. I really, you know, I do. And let's talk about this for just one sec, because this brings up an interesting point, is I think digital media, to me, digital media, what we do here, pictures, even music, I see as very disposable. So I could buy a song, lose it, and I would absolutely buy it again and not have a heart, you know, maybe a year later when I want to hear it, 99 cents, whatever. Because I see that as like a what would be a good equivalent? I mean, I just see it as a disposable, as a cheap disposable product. That, like, with these podcasts, I don't think people in, you know, Mike, you do this too. I think they have a shelf life of about 4 weeks, and then they're pretty much done at that point, right? I mean, the information gets old. Now, maybe yours lasts a little bit longer because of the material. But it is interesting. I think for the folks who fill in that stuff, they see this digital content and they see it as more permanent, and they protect it and they back it up. And I'm not saying I don't back it up, because I do back up. You know, I can never get these podcasts back again if I lost them, right? You just can't do it. It's like a picture. Do you feel like when you shoot photos, if you lost a whole photo shoot?
Oh my gosh, that would be horrible.
All right. So it's a little more permanent for you.
Yeah, and to the point where I am way overkill on the backing up. So even when I won't go through the whole thing, but just when I download the files off the card, Lightroom allows you to write the file into two different places. So the first place it goes, the main place, is to my PC, and it also at that same time is writing a copy out to my Unraid server. So right from the beginning, before I do anything, I've now got two copies, plus it's still on the card. And then it gets even crazier from there, but I won't go into all that.
Sure.
So yes, I'm definitely on overkill on protecting the files.
Yeah. Andrew, how about you? With your digital content, are you see it disposable or more permanent or what?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? You can't – I don't think you can dispose of a memory. And that's the way I see digital photos. I see them as memory triggers. And similar to the way we used to take our analog photos, if you will, and put them in photo albums, you never open the photo album to say, oh, I went here and I went there and I went there. And this is the way I approached a photo album. I never did it to, you know, sort of go, here's what I did. It was more so I could open it and go, I remember that, or I remember this, or I remember what happened after that photo was taken, or, you know, I've got a photo of myself on the, I think it's the west rim of the Grand Canyon, after I've gone, I did rim to rim in a day with a ranger, and I was absolutely knackered, and I just said to the guy, hey, listen, here's my camera, take a photo of me, because I can't hold it out there and do it myself.
Wait, did you say you were naked?
No, I wasn't naked.
Is that what
I was knackered. Sorry. There's an Australianism for you. I was exhausted.
Okay.
Yeah, that didn't translate really well.
I'm just taking a visual picture. You're talking about pictures of you and your buddy up in the mountains alone, naked.
No.
Taking pictures of each other.
Yeah, as Rennie's saying in chat, tired.
All right, we got you. Yeah. That was good though. That was good radio.
Yeah, but I've got a photo of me sitting on the rim of the Grand Canyon with my boots off, just looking absolutely trashed. But that to me is a memory trigger of,
right,
you know, starting off at, you know, three in the morning on one rim and coming back up, you know, around about lunchtime.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So you see that as more permanent. You definitely don't want to lose those.
No, and all my digital images, I burn them out to DVD probably every 12 to 18 months.
Okay.
And throw the old DVDs away, and I've got a couple of copies on external hard drives as well.
Okay. Christian, how do you see your digital content? You very protective of it, or a little lackadaisical and
priceless?
Okay. I guess that sums it up. What about your music? Do you really protect that, or are you kind of?
I mean, there's so many copies of it on Subsonic. It's
okay.
Protected.
Yeah. And maybe I'm asking three guys that are all, you know, we're all techies and have the ability to back it up. And maybe I'm just unusual. I don't, even my pictures that I've taken, if I lost them, would not necessarily be the end of the world to me. You know what I'm saying? I definitely have a more lackadaisical approach to it than say Andrew, say you do. I mean, and I'm not saying everybody should feel that way or that's the right way to feel. I'm just saying my digital, I'm a little lackadaisical with my digital content. And if I lost a group of pictures, it would be, oh, bummer. But, I don't know. I must process it differently for some reason. So I'm a little more, you know, I lost this, Sarah had put this, well, maybe it's because I didn't create it. Sarah had put this big photo or this big PowerPoint presentation together for my son's 18th birthday. A lot of pictures, a lot of music. She worked a lot of hours on it. And I lost the presentation in a meltdown with my equipment one weekend. And I was kind of, I felt bad because it meant a lot to her, but I didn't. It was one of those things I thought, oh, we'll never get that back. I mean, I just didn't even think about that. I thought, well, I still have all the pictures somewhere, and, you know, I don't know. So it's just a different way of approaching it, I guess.
Do you think part of it's, I think probably people who've got young kids these days who do everything digitally, you know, so digital video camera, digital still camera, you know, digital. I think people who took things on transparency have a different approach as well. Because your kids, you would have been taking their pictures on 35mm, wouldn't
they? Right. We have albums and albums and albums of pictures, of actual pictures and albums from when they were younger. Yeah. And even then, though, yeah. Even if I lost those, though, I mean, I haven't looked at those in years.
And, yeah, but they're memory triggers, aren't they?
They are. They absolutely are. Yeah. They are. We've got a few of them hanging up in the kitchen, and maybe everybody has this. We've got a few hanging up in the kitchen, the really funny ones that make us smile every time we look at them. So that's, yeah. And then Mike, obviously, you know, you have your son up there on the wall from, and how old is that photo?
He is probably 6 or so there, so that's probably 6 years ago. He's 12 now.
Okay. Yeah. And that means something to you, right? You've got that on your website. That's a really important photo for you. All right. Not I didn't want to necessarily get philosophical on there, but I was interested in how I think maybe I am unusual in the sense of being able to let those things kind of go pretty easily. And I don't know why that is. I don't. Yeah. Okay. Good enough. Let's talk real quick about Windows 8 and Mike, that you'd posted a Engadget article in the notes about some changes coming to Windows 8. We talked about it briefly in the pre-show, but why don't you give us a quick summary?
Yeah, it looks like they're just taking feedback. They're hearing all the people complain about the new UI. They're not going to change it completely or dump it because I think it's an integral part, but they are listening to the feedback. And one of the things they're doing is going more high def with the thumbnails or technically whatever you call those things, make them look a little better. You know, one of my complaints was it looked like something from the 70s.
Yeah.
So they're now looking, they're looking better in this little sample they have here. They're allowing you to group them into groups rather than just alphabetical. And, you know, I think the good news is they're listening and they're making adjustments. They're also, you know, shrinking them so you can fit more of them on there.
Yeah. So if you look at the Engadget article, and we'll post that in the show notes. Actually, Andrew will post it in the show notes. It does look more like this looks like a green desktop with a bunch of icons that have explanation. I mean, it's not that high tech. In fact, it's a little bit retro in some ways. I mean, it does takes the desktop back a few years.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to, with this new, that they're showing here in the Engadget article, if they're going to let you have a mix of these icons.
I would hope so, because there are some live tiles that would look really, really good in things like weather and the stock market and news.
Yeah.
Would be perfect for that live tile, large size, or let me size it in a certain square and it adapts to whatever size I make that, right?
Exactly. That's why I would like that too. And I like them to look a little bit. Right now they look, and I know this is a developer thing, so we need to give them a little bit of leeway here, but, you know, look a little bit, 3D-ish, you know, how you do the edges to make it look a little nicer. Right now it's such hard edges and it just doesn't look that good. What they're showing here with these little icons do look pretty good. But like you said, Jim, it looks like somebody just converted their desktop to green.
Yeah,
and
right.
They just loaded it up with icons.
Right.
And you know, how many of us do that now? We could all do that now with our desktop.
Yeah.
But who does that? Nobody wants that.
Me. Well, again.
Oh, you do?
my desktop is a mess.
And you like it that way?
Don't necessarily like it that way, but it's
the way it is.
It's a dog's breakfast.
Yeah. Christian, what does your desktop look like?
Amazing.
A lot of icons.
Nah, I got most. I got nice rocket docs and nice jump lists, and
of course,
got my rain meter and gadgets going. And,
yeah.
I don't put any icons on my desktop. That's just ugly. I like looking at pretty pictures.
Right.
Yeah, you see, I'm kind of the same way as Christian is. Is you want your desktop to be pretty? I want my desktop to be fairly clean with a few of the what they call it, widgets or whatever that I want up there. And those widgets look pretty good in Windows 7.
Yeah.
And then I have a nice image back there.
Yeah. I actually have one of your images on my desktop, Mike.
Well, thank you very much. So, you know, I wonder if in Windows 8, even with this Metro UI, if you could opt out of the green and actually have a picture back there. Then if you're going to have a picture back there, you're going to want all these icons all over it.
Well, but imagine this on a tablet. I think it goes back to this. I think where this is going to shine is on the tablet. And so imagine this on a tablet.
Yeah.
Right.
Tablet's a different thing. But what I was hearing on, I think it was Windows Weekly, they were talking about the desktop in Windows 8. And it's not like the desktop, if I understand it.
True. Yeah.
And I'm not an expert here. But what they were talking about is the desktop is not like it is now. It's more like the desktop is an application and not its own kernel. It's like an application.
Sure.
Is that what you understood too?
I think so. Yes. Yeah. That's
it. Me too.
If that's the case, I'm wondering if you could just opt out of the Metro and go full-time desktop.
I think you're going to be able to. I'm guessing. I know nothing.
Get rid of Metro with a registry hack.
Well, but I think Andrew. Well, I don't know. I think they're gonna. I think in the end they're gonna make it an option.
Well, that
won't
so,
require a registry hack.
It'd be interesting to watch. Yeah.
I'd really hope so, because I like the Metro desktop about as much as Christian likes HP hardware.
Just not very much. Jay Moore, I apologize in advance. We did talk about Windows 8, so I'm sorry. But hopefully that beta will come out here soon, maybe. I mean, maybe CES. So January?
Yeah. Yeah,
that would be dynamite to get another look. Okay, so I think the real good news in this is that Microsoft's listening, right?
That is the good news, yes.
Yeah,
and they're willing to make some changes.
Yeah, that's exciting. Is that they've heard they're listening to they're listening to podcasters talk about it. They're listening to people complain about it. I'm sure this stuff gets just gets written up I just forgot the name of what's the Microsoft community that they use to submit bugs and stuff into. Connect?
Connect. No.
Is it Connect? Yeah, it is Connect.
Yeah, it's Connect.
Yeah, it is Connect. So, yeah, some good stuff. So if you've been holding off, at least it looks like there's some new things coming for Windows 8 here in the near future. Andrew, you got cut off in the last little bit of your touchpad. Bit, and I know we think that Microsoft was listening, but any other you were talking about, you know, I think I asked you the question of why you would play Android, but would you do it? Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, I've spent probably the last couple of weeks working out the best pre-wear patches and mods and things to put on the device to make it run the way I want to. It gives me a good day's battery life. I can watch 3 or 4, you know, TV shows on it. There's nothing more I need to do with it.
Yeah. It's a good device with the WebOS.
Yeah.
On it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It just works.
You don't need to route it to Android for that.
Yeah.
Most everything. Yeah. They don't have a gazillion apps, but most everything works and integrated Skype and the email. I like the email. It didn't get great reviews, but I liked the unified email. Yeah. Yeah. So I think I say leave it. I'd still like to get my hands on one, although I just think they're all gone.
Yeah. I think that might be.
Yeah.
eBay.
No, I'm not that desperate. Not that desperate for a tablet. All right, gentlemen, we've been going for a while. Any other last little tidbits Mike, you'd put in there that Google Plus now has 40 million plus users out there?
40 million users.
And I know none of which are above 18.
Below 18.
Or below 18.
And Christian was talking about Google Plus Hangouts, but they have added one thing to Google Plus. Well, they added several things, but one of them is to the Hangouts is the extras now, and you can do screen sharing even in your group of 10 users viewing at one time. You can screen share one screen at a time, but you can screen share,
right?
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's good. We're going to continue to explore. I know you're going to start working a little bit in Google Plus on your podcast, and of course we use Google Plus every weekend on Rich's Random Podcast Generator. And so it'll be kind of fun to kind of mess with it. And see the new. So with screen sharing, there were a couple features, right? Screen sharing and
doc sharing
right there. So that'd be interesting because we're currently using Google Docs right now with this podcast that we're sharing. And so instead of having two separate windows, we could just have that up. Now, I'm not sure I want the audience seeing the notes that we have just from that effect. But I don't know.
But if you use Google Hangout and you use this, the layout is different of the screen than regular Google Hangout. And you don't have that sound when people enter and leave the room.
You're right. That is gone, isn't it? That is kind of nice. I didn't notice that. Yeah. That's cool. Well, if you haven't gone out and tried Google Plus yet, that's certainly – and I know Christian's a little bitter about it because they did some age verification and – it's not. He's stuck. They gotta drop that, Christian. I think at some point.
They gotta.
Maybe when it comes out of beta in 2016, and you're 18 by then. Sorry, I just like to pick on.
Someday.
I do have one little piece of news that we can end on.
Go.
And that is Duke Nukem 3D is coming to the Android.
Duke Nukem.
And you guys play Duke Nukem? I know, Christian.
You know, that skipped me. My kids played it when they were younger.
I guess
that was fun with the BFG, wasn't it?
It was, yes. I gotta imagine it's past its prime, but it's still interesting to see they're trying to get it to continue.
Yeah.
Didn't they do a release of it a couple years back?
They just put it out on the Xbox 360 within the last 6 months, and from what all I heard, it was horrible.
Yeah, I didn't get very good reviews.
After delaying it and saying it's coming any day now for the last 13 years.
Duke Nukem Forever was the one they did, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Recently, yeah.
Yeah. Well, gents, Mike, thanks for that last little story, and thanks for coming out and doing your rotation here at the Home Tech Podcast. It's always good to have you on. And, of course, folks can hear you over at JPEG2RAW. That's with a number 2, right? JPEG2RAW.com.
Number 2, yes.
Tuesday nights, 7 p.m. Central. And you had 45 people live on your show.
46.
46. Okay, sorry. Yeah, very good. So that is certainly meeting a niche out there. And so if folks want to go out and listen to it, do that. And, of course, come back here on Thursday nights. Mike joins us about every 6 weeks as we rotate guests through here. You can join us each and every week here on theaverageguy.tv/live. And, of course, Christian and Andrew join me every week for this. You can find us out on Facebook. Just search for The Average Guy Podcast. You can track me down on Twitter, and I had a lot of Twitter traffic this week. I was very, very surprised. Part of it is Dave McCabe is out in Vegas, and he's been taunting me with pictures, and he's sending them on Twitter. and then the other part is we have a huge Oracle conference here in Omaha in next Thursday. Oh, nice. Was that you, Andrew? That was Andrew.
That is me.
He's got the Hawaii
5-0.
Yeah, Hawaii 5-0 on there. All right, this is it for the This is the Home Tech Podcast. We'll do it all again next week. Good night, guys.
Good night.
See ya.
honestly forgot where I was.
I was trying to look it up to see what number this is. 47.
Oh, it's been a long week. We are out to Kansas City next week or this weekend. We leave tomorrow afternoon. My son, it's Parents Day at the Kansas City Art Institute. So we're going down there to see how he's doing. And he actually told me over Skype he will be glad to see us. So that's kind of
good.
Aw, that's kind of nice. So